Hello, this is Aniko Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, and today, Something More, a book by Sarah Ban Breathnock. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back. I am going to be reading a letter from the editor's letter, actually, of Harper's Bazaar, because they are celebrating 150 years of the magazine. And Glenda Bailey is the editor, and she is talking about Harper's Bazaar's new 150th anniversary book. And this is what she says. As many of you know, we've been marking Bazaar's 150th anniversary this year by dedicating each issue to a particular time in the magazine's history. Now I am proud to announce the publication of our long-awaited book, Harper's Bazaar, 150 Years, The Greatest Moments. It is the story of America's first fashion magazine, which was conceived for women whose definition of living fashionably encompassed not just what one wore, but also how one thought. That principle has guided Bazaar over the past century and a half. Legendary editors like Mary Louise Booth, Carmel Snow, Diana Vreeland, and Liz Tilberis shepherded the magazine through transformative periods while always featuring cutting-edge fashion. Under their visionary leadership, renowned photographers from Louis Dahl Wolfe, Lillian Bassman, Richard Avedon, and Henri Cartier-Bresson, to Peter Lindbergh, Patrick Demarchelier, and Jean-Paul Goude, captured the ever-changing faces and trends in breathtaking images. Along with these photographs, Bazaar has published writings by some of the most iconic voices of each generation. Victorian-era luminaries like Charles Dickens, Henry James, and Mark Twain were followed by the Jazz Age's Anita Loos, the Fitzgeralds, and Dorothy Parker. The 1930s, with works by W.H. Auden and Gertrude Stein, gave way to Truman Capote, Simone de Beauvoir, Eudora Welty, William Faulkner, Flannery O'Connor, Tom Wolfe, and Susan Sontag in the ensuing decades. Our archives' cultural wealth extends to aesthetic contributions by such influential artists as Andy Warhol, Salvador Dali, Chuck Close, Cindy Sherman, and John Baldessari. From 1867 to today, Bazaar has shown women how to take what they glean from the magazine and make it work in their own unique lives. As we look back, we also look ahead, and we're excited to continue and add to Bazaar's legacy. Here's to 150 more years, Glenda. So today we're going to start off with a couple of stories. One is, or articles, I should say. One is from Harper's Bazaar, and it is on getting Jordan's look, which is recreating the model's stunning makeup with expert tips from Maybelline New York lead makeup artist Grace Lee. And this is called Alluring Lips. Burgundy and orange-toned reds feel modern for spring, says Lee. To make a vibrant color last all day, start by filling in your lips completely with a creamy lip pencil. This technique helps keep your lip shape neat and gives your lipstick extra staying power. Blot the pencil, then apply lipstick straight from the tube and blot again. A highly pigmented, rich matte formula will be long-wearing but won't feel dry on your lips. Use the pencil to refine and clean up the edges. Choose a liner color that either matches your lipstick or is slightly darker for a little more dimension and definition. And then glamour eyes, glamorous eyes. Take your cue from Dunn and highlight your eyes with a warm metallic shadow. A sweep of a shimmery gold or bronze shade complements every eye color and makes your eyes look bright. To get the most intensity, see, Lee suggests applying shadow with a slightly damp shadow brush. It will amplify the pigment. For the thickest, fullest lashes, first curl, then coat them with multiple layers of mascara to lock in eye-opening lift. And finally, perfect skin. A flawless complexion ensures that all attention stays on statement lips. Prep skin with primer to mattify oily areas and help foundation glide on evenly. Lee recommends skipping a brush and using your fingers to apply a thin layer of foundation. Your fingers can really work foundation into your skin for full coverage with a natural finish. Make it seamless by using a damp makeup sponge to add extra coverage where needed or to buff out any excess product near your hairline and jawline. And that is about some beauty tips. And now for a little bit further, we look at getting a good night's sleep because, as you know, that really helps to keep you beautiful. This article is from the March issue of Harper's Bazaar 2017, and it is called, How Do I Get a Great Night's Sleep? And now that summer is finally here, you might have a chance for some really good sleep. Here's some expert advice. So experts share the most effective way to catch more Z's, and this is by Nicole Catanese. All right, the psychologist, Michael Bruse, Los Angeles. Pick a sleep-wake schedule and stick to it every day. After just 2 days of not waking up at the same time, your body doesn't know when to sleep. The average sleep cycle is 90 minutes long, and the average person requires 5 sleep cycles. If you need to wake up at 6:30 a.m., subtract 5 90-minute cycles. That's 7.5 hours. And that's your bedtime. Nothing is worse for sleep than looking at your phone or iPad in bed. But it's not just about being exposed to blue light, which tells your brain that it's morning, and to stop producing the sleep hormone melatonin. It's your mind saying, I have to send this one email out. The 20 minutes before sleep should be for relaxation while lying in bed. In my mental workout, Good Night app, there are 5 to 14 minute calming techniques. You have to allow your body to slow down, and that can't happen if you're on Instagram. And then the sleep doctor, Robert S. Rosenberg, he's a DO from Arizona, and that's, I think, a doctor of osteopathy. Expose yourself to bright light, especially sunlight, for about 15 minutes upon waking. This strengthens your circadian rhythms for future sleep and improves your mood. At bedtime, keep things very dark. Use blackout shades, conceal the light from your alarm clock, and wear a sleep mask. Keeping your bedroom at 65 to 70 degrees has been found to be most compatible with sleep. Your core body temperature drops about 1 degree while you sleep and reaches its lowest temperature at about 5 a.m. The drop is one of the signals that brings on and helps maintain sleep, and sleeping in cooler temperatures can help facilitate this decrease. Remember, falling asleep is a passive process that involves letting go. If that's difficult for you, try constructive worrying. 3 hours before bed, write down problems and solutions for things that are on your mind. You're changing the counterproductive behavior of bringing problems into the bedroom by working them out earlier. If they crop up in the bedroom, tell yourself, I've already dealt with this. And finally, Frank Lipman, who is an MD from New York, is the wellness expert. Food, drink, and exercise affect your sleep. Half of your caffeine intake is still in your system 6 hours after drinking it. So stop all coffee and tea at noon. Have dinner 2 or 3 hours before bed so your body can focus on rest, not digesting. Drinking wine may relax you enough to fall asleep, but you'll wake up in the middle of the night when your blood sugar drops back down. Aim for 2 drinks maximum and opt for no sugar options. Tequila on the rocks instead of wine. Exercise every day. Being physically tired helps you sleep, but energizing workouts such as spinning and HIIT should be done by midday. You can try supplements with calming effects a half hour to an hour before bed. I only suggest taking melatonin for short periods, no more than a week or two, because overuse can disrupt sleep. I prefer amino acids like L-theanine and GABA, that's all caps G-A-B-A, and herbs such as lemon balm and valerian root. They're in my Be Well sleep formula. And he actually sells that for $44. All right, and as the days get warmer and you have more time to spend outdoors, be aware of ticks. This article tells how to prevent and treat Lyme disease. And this is also from Harper's Bazaar. Time to get ticked off. Everything you need to know to be safe, to stay safe, by Liz Krieger. It's the little things in life, they say. Yes, small pleasures can make life great, but the itty-bitty can also bring you to your knees. Take Lyme disease, a giant problem that comes from the bite of a minuscule deer tick. As the weather warms up, it's vital to know everything possible about this illness, says Heather Hurst, founder of ProjectLyme.org, which seeks to raise awareness about the disease. Almost everyone knows someone who has a Lyme disease horror story, a misdiagnosis, months of suffering from mysterious, debilitating symptoms that mimic those of other ailments, says Hurst. The smart strategy? Know your enemy and plan your defense. How you get it? A quick nip from a tick carrying Borrelia, the Lyme disease bacteria, sets off the infection, says Elena Frid, MD, a neuro-Lyme specialist in New York. Experts disagree as to whether you're more likely to become infected if the tick, usually the size of a poppy seed, remains attached or not. It can be hard to know if you've been bitten. The tick has a numbing medicine in its mouth, so you won't feel it happening, notes Nevena Zubchevic, DO, a clinical co-director at the Dean Center for Tick-Borne Illness in Boston. Use repellent and do a daily check. When you're outdoors, make sure to spray on insect repellent. Effective ingredients, lemon eucalyptus, 20% picaridin, or DEET, which is all caps D-E-E-T, says Zubchevic. Another option is to treat your clothes with permethrin spray, which kills ticks on contact. It lasts for up to 6 washes. It's especially important that you check yourself thoroughly once you come inside. Ideally, you'll make checking for ticks as integral a part of your nighttime routine as brushing your teeth, says Hurst. And don't forget places like behind and inside the ears, your hairline, belly button, groin, and between your toes. Ignore the calendar, look at the mercury. Lyme disease has been reported in all 50 states, so unless you're in a desert or on the tundra, says Frid, you may be exposed, and not just in summer. Ticks sleep when it's below freezing, but all you need are a few days in the 50s or 60s during the winter, and the ticks wake up, she adds. While ticks often hang out in bushes, wooded areas, and tall grass, recent studies have shown they've been found in urban parks. Recognize the symptoms. They can vary widely and include common complaints like fever, headache, joint aches, and fatigue, which can mimic the flu or a number of other illnesses. As for the so-called telltale skin rash, sometimes in a bull's eye pattern, it's present in only about 20% of patients, and of them, just 7% actually get that bull's eye, says Frid. So if you're looking only for that rash as a way to tell if you have Lyme, it's very misleading. Other things to look for: difficulty concentrating and neurological symptoms like facial paralysis. Test once, test twice. It takes 4 to 6 weeks for your body to produce antibodies to the bacteria. So if you get tested too soon, the blood test may come back negative. Your physician should know to base the diagnosis not just on the test results, but also on your symptoms and your story, and then retest you within an appropriate time frame, Frid says. Vexingly, if you wait too long, the disease can suppress your immune system, also resulting in a false negative. About those tests, the big ones, the ELISA, E-L-I-S-A, and the Western blot, are only 30 to 50% accurate, Frid says. Ask your doctor about specialized labs like iGeneX and medical diagnostic laboratories. Finally, tailor your treatment. The most effective way to treat Lyme disease is with antibiotics, with the type of drug and the length of treatment depending on your specific case. If your doctor isn't as knowledgeable about Lyme disease as you would like, look for someone who specializes in these sorts of tick-borne illnesses, says Frid. Two sites that can help you find a doctor is, one is ILADS, and that's capital I-L-A-D as in dog, S.org, and LymeDisease.org. So remember, make checking for ticks as integral a part of your nighttime routine as brushing your teeth, says Heather Hurst. In Glenda Bailey's editorial letter regarding the 150th anniversary of Harper's Bazaar, she noted that it's the story of America's first fashion magazine, which was conceived for women whose definition of living fashionably encompassed not just what one wore, but also how one thought. And I want to get back to that for just a moment. I have a book entitled Something More by Sarah Ban Breathnach, and she's got a little section in here that is kind of addressing that issue of how one thinks. And this one is entitled Authentic Success. Summer may be a time to kind of think about these things, and it's kind of fun actually to think about really what is authentic success and how do you attain that. So authentic success, and there's a quote from George Bernard Shaw: the real moment of success is not the moment apparent to the crowd. When you were a child, you got report cards filled out by teachers to tell your parents how you were doing in school. It's difficult to make the transition from external judgment to internal acceptance, but it's a journey we all must make to reach our essential selves as adults. Authentic success is internal. Often, other people aren't even aware at first that you've reached it. The moment of success is the awareness that, quote, I can do it, or I have done it. And it's comforting to know that this can't be taken away from you by an external event, not by someone who is firing you or complains about you or by anyone else. When we achieve authentic success, we don't compare ourselves to others quite so often. That awful force, envy, seems to diminish. In fact, we want others to have the same chances we've had to do what they would truly love to do. We become generous of spirit. I believe talent is like electricity, says Maya Angelou. We don't understand electricity. We use it. You can plug into it and light up a lamp, keep a heart pump going, light a cathedral, or you can electrocute a person with it. Electricity will do all that. It makes no judgment. I think talent is like that. Maya Angelou believes all of us are born with talent. She's right. What do you think are your talents, your authentic gifts? Are you using them in your work, your life, right now? If you could have 10 career choices, what would they be? Who would you be? What was one of your real moments of success? What really happened before that photo was taken of you holding your trophy? Joseph Campbell spoke of following your bliss. What is your bliss? What activity makes you glow, makes the hours slip away, makes you lose track of time? Those are good questions, and it might be just a lot of fun to answer them. See where you go with them. And I have one more little article here from the same author, and it's called Authentic Style. So Harper's Bazaar talked about style. What is your authentic style? And Catherine Kober has said the Greek word for truth, aletheia, means not hidden. As we continue removing layers of psychological and emotional sediment from the dig, take a moment to glance through some old photos. What were you wearing? What does that indicate about who you were at that time? What were you doing? Does that dress spark memories for you? A photo of me at 6 years old reminds me of a game I used to play as my mother emptied our laundry baskets in preparation for the wash. Sometimes I would throw a sheet over myself and become the Princess Suzette. When my mother took the sheet to be washed, Suzette transformed into an ordinary girl, able to mingle among her people incognito. The villagers did not realize that I was a princess, but I knew, and that knowledge transformed my everyday life into something exciting and exotic. Did you do something similar? What has happened to the sense of majesty and importance, that appetite for being dramatic? Why shouldn't you reclaim it? What about a creative excursion to a thrift shop to search for something different, offbeat, or dramatic to wear to your next party? Ease into it by wearing it around the house first. I have a very tall friend who used to try to hide the fact. She always wanted to be petite, like I am. I, on the other hand, wanted to be tall. She would hunch her shoulders. She wore frilly clothes. Finally, one day, a special friend gave her a long forest green tunic that was perfect for a tall, stately woman. She looked stunning in it. So she began changing her wardrobe, wearing long jackets and blazers, long sweaters and skirts, large pins. She came to accept the fact that she is tall. Soon she moved differently, not taking small steps, but possessing the air around her, as her dance teacher used to say. She opened her eyes and saw who she really was, and found her authentic style, going with who she was instead of against it. A friend who is a computer software designer came upon her authentic style by speaking in public when she had to address her first sales conference. She led off by trying to tell a joke. She thought all public speaking started out that way. But her joke fell flat, and she found it difficult to recover during the rest of the speech. My friend's experience taught her that being a comedian is not her style, that she should simply present the facts straightforwardly. If humor happened to emerge spontaneously between the lines, that was fine, but she realized she spoke best when she wasn't trying to play to the crowd. She realized she had to be herself. Have you discovered your own authentic style? Did someone help you in your quest? What was the first occasion on which you looked in the mirror and thought, "Now you, I like. This is more like it." What colors make you smile? List them. Color them in a book. Maybe a journal. It took me years to realize that gold was a color I should wear. I had ignored the fact that every time I put it on, I shined. What colors do you love? List the physical activities that make you feel joyous. In which photos in your scrapbook do you look like the essential you? Make photocopies of these and paste them in, say, a journal. Well, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about all that and what your colors are and what makes you feel happy and good and all that stuff. Anyway, I hope that is something fun that you can do when you have a little bit of spare time now that summer is here. Woohoo! All right. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I know I've enjoyed spending this time with you. I'm Annika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by or at KiwanisFoundation.org. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and come back again next Thursday evening at 10.